Accession number 19588, Reel 2.
Morris Leslie, Reel 2.
The loading was probably the worst part about it. The showers, they stood roughly, we'll say, about two foot high they were. We used to load in their heavy shells, the 17-pounder, but when they fired, there was such a flash used to come out of the back that the loader used to have to go in close to the front of the tank to avoid the flash back and the flash coming out the back of the gun.
So we must be getting close to D-Day now, are we?
Well, after that, we went up to Scotland. We were stationed in this case near Forres, and there we'd done all our training with the 3rd Infantry Division, which was the assault division, and we were one of the assault, we were supporting them, the 27th Armed Brigade. We spent 3 or 4 weeks up there. We'd done some firing at Lossiemouth, the big Air Force place and Fleet Air Arm. I then got yellow jaundice and ended up in hospital at Fort George.
How did you contract that?
Well, I was on manoeuvres there. I mean, the basic pack rack we had to eat while we were on manoeuvres was a 48-hour pack which consists of all dehydrated foods. I used to have to put them in water, and you got they all swelled up, and that's what you had for a meal. And I spent 5 weeks. I spent 10 days in Fort George, 4 weeks in hospital, in convalescent. I then moved down to Oxford and rejoined the regiment down in just outside Southampton. About 3 days before they went across D-Day.
What happened in Southampton?
Well, in Southampton, all they were doing was preparing everything. All the tanks, by that time, we'd already lost our DD tanks. Although we'd been trained on DD, the Yanks had then decided that they wanted, after months of persuasion, to have DD tanks. So, from down near Ipswich, we gave our DD tanks up to the Yanks. We had to go and teach them how to use them, and we lost our DD tank. So when we arrived down at Southampton, we had ordinary tanks which we had to sort of make waterproof. They had big chutes on the back, and being as we weren't the first or second wave in of tanks, we had to waterproof all these tanks, and that's what we were doing, preparing everything. Before we actually went over.
But these were Shermans?
These were Shermans again, yeah. But they weren't the DD tanks we've been training on.
What else happened at Southampton?
Pardon?
What else happened at Southampton?
Well, nothing really. We got visited by royalty and Montgomery. They all visited the camp. Of course, you weren't allowed out of the camp at all. Everybody knows that was it. And you were just confined to camp. Nobody was allowed out whatsoever.
Did Monty give a speech?
Well, he gave a sort of speech, but he was with King... Well, six, wasn't it? King
George the Sixth.
King George the Sixth came round. And then within 2 or 3 days of that, Eisenhower came round as well, obviously. And then... we went down to Southampton and we boarded the tank landing. And that was at, about the 4th of June, I suppose. And then we moved out to the Solent, and we lay off the Isle of Wight for 2 days, waiting for the storm to abate.
What was it like in the landing craft?
Well, it was confined, but I mean, it was, the food was reasonable. Because nobody was seasick. I looked across the Isle of Wight and saw most of the place I knew, because my mother was an Isle of Wight, and we'd been across the Isle of Wight quite often. I knew Ryde, we were opposite Ryde. But we weren't allowed, we just played darts and got our French money and all this and played, well, obviously we played games and that. And the money was on the question, the French franc and that. And that's all we done, mostly for 2 days. And then we set sail the evening before June the 6th.
Were you nervous waiting to go across?
Oh yes, everybody was nervous, but obviously everybody was keyed up. But the nerves were still there. Unfortunately, we set sail on, as you know, flat bottom boats going into a storm, aren't exactly, and everybody was seasick. Although they'd given us these tablets, and it was even worse taking the tablets because you wanted to be sick and you couldn't be. All the naval personnel were sick, so nobody was cooking any meals, and it was terrible crossing. Nobody got much sleep. And then when dawn broke, we saw the rest of the armada.
What did that look like?
Well, it looked like a mass of ships going. There was just one continuous stream of ships with destroyers on either side of them. There was small ships, tank landing craft mainly. The larger ships never came till later on. But the tank landing craft, well, they were reasonable ships, but they were still flat bottom. And then you had the infantry ships ahead of them, the smaller ships. And then by the time we hit the French coast, we knew we was in some sort of war because Jerry was then shelling us from Le Havre. The big guns were coming from Le Havre. And then, of course, when we lost a few tank landing craft on either side, they got blown up. We then had to turn round and go back because the shores weren't clear. And then the big warships then opened up on the Le Havre big guns to try and put them out of it, which they did to a certain extent. And then we landed about we were supposed to land at 11 o'clock, we didn't land till about 12, half past 12.
Can you describe the landing?
Pardon?
Can you describe the landing?
Well, all we know, we hit the beach. We were lucky, more so than some people, we hit a good part of the beach whereby the tanks could land. Some didn't, some landed and went under because they hit a sandbank and they thought they hit the beach. We hit the beach, it was chaos on the beach because obviously there was a lot of flames, a lot of burnt out tanks, a lot of dead, a lot of smoke around. And then by that time we hit the beach, we were then past the house. There was a house, where was it? We were Wee Stream, the left of the Wee Stream. And we then moved inland past a couple of villages. We saw a lot of German prisoners. We then moved to a holding unit into a field where we waited for the rest of the regiment to come up. We then discarded our main chutes at the back, which is a big chute for exhaust fumes and all this. We discarded them. And although we were the reserve battalion, we were ordered to attack a hill, to go inland to attack a hill 5 miles inland.
Had you landed at Sword Beach?
Yes, we had, yeah. Just to the left, Wee Stream it was. Lyon-sur-Mer was the place we landed at.
So you had to, you were given orders to attack a hill?
Yes, we lost our first tank casualties on that hill. We took the hill, we stayed there, and then that was to make it safe for the airborne, the rest of the airborne, 6th Airborne came in on the hill we were on, and there was nothing else but gliders. They came in on the hill. And we made it safe for the airborne. The airborne landed, the rest of the 6th Airborne landed before they moved on to their ejectors further on to the left.
Did you fire yourself?
We were busy firing, yes.
What type?
We were firing our 75s mainly because we had anti-tank fire. It was a bit, because nobody seemed to know where anybody was, you know what I mean? There was no intelligence reports of anything. And by the time the airborne finished, we moved a bit further and we were looking on Caen. We weren't far away from Caen itself. And then we were ordered to move back a bit. In fact, one regiment had already been on the outskirts, but they were told to withdraw. The 1318 Hussars, our leading, they were ordered to withdraw because the lines were so thin and they'd run into SS. The 20th, was it? SS Panzer Division.
So that was the first day?
That was the first day, yeah. And we lost some more casualties tonight because we came back and bivouacked. And we lost it through our own anti-aircraft fire. In them days, you see, most of the tank fighting had been derived from the Western Desert, whereby you could bivouac outside in a tent, outside the tent. And of course, with anti-aircraft going, what goes up must come down. And we lost some more casualties. So after that, we then decided, most of us were our own, to stick ourselves under the tank in various, so as to get some sleep.
Did you get any?
Not really, because you were on guard duty as well. And you were on standby if there was any breakthrough or any. And this happened time and time again. We used to come in at 11 o'clock at night, clean the guns, fill up with petrol, get ammunition. Then we used to cook, then guard duty, and then we were back on song for about 3 a.m. standby again. And off we used to move at 4 o'clock light. And this happened for about, well, we had a week solid of it. Then we moved back for... By this time, we were heavily involved with our own infantry, taking various places like Caen and Vacamp and that. Then we moved back. We were always behind the infantry, mainly behind the infantry, in case of attack. We moved back for 2 days to a place called Vacamp. But then, before we had chance to do anything, we just had chance again. We were back in action again. We were called back into action again. So although we reserved the battalion for the first nearly 2 months, we were mainly in action, either doing our own patrols, helping the infantry attack certain areas. Our tank had been hit at that time. We'd been hit 6 times.
Can you describe the hits on the tank? What?
Yeah, happened? We lost a couple of bogies. So we had to come back at night and repair them. We got hit on the back of the engine. I got hit above there. I could see daylights with the top, through the top of the tank. And that was some of our worst experiences with that. And we got fired on with their tanks, of course, being as we didn't know where their tanks were. And the most fatal one we ever had was a place called La Bijou. And that's where we were ordered in to attack as a feint, because the main attack wasn't doing very well. We went in and 20 tanks went in, and only 6 tanks came back out.
Were you in there?
Yes, we got hit. I lost 3 of the first crew. We managed to get the blazing tank back to within 100 yards of our own lines in the middle of a minefield. We crawled about 100 yards with Jerry sniping all the time at us, and it took us about an hour off, 2 hours to crawl 100 yards, and we got back to our own lines.
So you didn't try to abandon the tank?
Yes, we did. We tried to get the tank back, although it was ablaze. The crew commander and the operator had been killed. And I managed to look back. Because, being honest, although I was the gunner, that day through some sort of, whether it was just by chance, we changed around. The older member of the team, who was 35, was asked to leave because they said he was too old for action. And I was shoved in his place as co-driver. That was in front. The operator, who was a gunner op, moved over to my position. And we had a new fella, a Trooper Robinson, come in to take over the operating. And that was the day before we got hit. And unfortunately, the crew commander, Lieutenant Howard, got killed. Trooper Robinson got killed. And the mate, who was Jack Rawlins, is a trooper. Well, there's three of us together. We were in the same football team. That's been in the same crew for ages. He got badly wounded. Looking back in the turret, we could see the tank was on fire. The driver was trying to get the tank back. I didn't see Jack. Lieutenant Howard had he was beheaded, where a shot had taken his head off. And the other fellow was lying dead alongside him. He managed to steer the tank as near as he could to our own lines. We then jumped out the tank, and the first thing was, where's Jack? And then we heard a bloke crawling behind, and that was Jack, and he was wounded badly in the leg. So we put him down by the side, moved him on a bit farther, put him down and tried to put a dressing on his wound. And then there we crawled all the way back to our own lines through this sort of so-called minefield. And we managed to get back to our own lines. Jack then went to the first aid station. We then rejoined our regiment. And we were the only two walking back. And the other crew said they knew something had happened, because there was only two of us came back. From there, as I said before, there was only six of the so-called tanks come back, although I understand they recovered another 10 later on. We then went back to Echelon. And we then came under fire from German aircraft. So we spent all night again in trenches. And then we spent another further night there, and then we picked up a further tank and joined the regiment again. So we had a different crew again. There was the driver and myself were still there available, and then we picked up three different crew members, including a Sergeant Morel, who was, he was our crew commander. And there we rejoined the regiment, and then eventually we moved on to a place called Tron, which is at the left of the we sooner moved in there, and we got hit again by something that landed on the tank. It twisted all the gun around. We were in the tank, and we got a bit splintered with a bit of sort of flaky shrapnel around. We then went back to took the tank in what state it was in, although it could go. There was no gun. The guns were of no use, so we went back and we got another tank again.
Was the fighting in Normandy as you had expected or not?
Well, no, we seem to know what to expect, but I mean, it was more severe than we thought, because I mean, the unfortunate part about it, being as most of the fields in France were so small, that the Germans, obviously, they got well dug in. Most of the high hills were taken by Germans. They got dug in. Their tanks were well dug in. They were well fortified. The country wasn't suitable for tanks, because you had all these hedgerows all around. And of course, being as the German carried these sort of Panzerfists, as we call them, which were a deadly weapon up to about 80 or 100 yards, you can imagine the havoc you used to wreak with them. And they were so light to carry, and you couldn't see him if he was hidden in the hedge. It was fighting. It was bitter. there was no sort of questions asked about how we fought the battle, as long as we remained on the winning side. There were incidents whereby we got attacked at night. We then dismounted and fought sort of infantry. If they attacked our one night, they attacked us and we fought infantry with our machine guns. We took them out of the tanks and fought them. But it was sort of close. You didn't sort of know where he was and where he was or where what he was doing. And of course, you were sort of fighting into the unknown. It was severe. But as I said, after the first fortnight, you got sort of battle-wise, as they call it. I mean, often you used to be caught out. I mean, often you used to be caught out in the middle of no man's land. And Jerry had everything pinpointed. You know what I mean? He had everything documented. So he could fire his artillery just when he liked. And in one particular, and we lost we lost a few officers in a farmhouse. We lost our squadron leader. He got killed. Hyde, he was one of our best squadron leaders we ever had. He got killed there. And then we lost another squadron leader there. So it didn't matter where you go, you were targeted all the time. And you had to be careful. You had to make a dive for the nearest cover and find out where the nearest cover was. And the worst of it was getting caught out in the open.
In what way was Hyde the best commander you ever had?
Well, he was a gentleman that joined. He was a gentleman that joined us from, I think it was one of the Dragoons. I think it was either the 4th 7th or the Enniskillens. He'd taken the place of a Major Ellison, who was a Dunkirk veteran. He then moved up to second in command of the regiment. And he was more down to earth. In other words, he said that once everybody went to France, everybody had the mess sort of muck in. He said there was no officer unit, no officer material, no this. He said everybody on the tank crew had a mess in together. So you were one combined unit. In other words, everybody had to take a turn of everything. In other words, he was trying to cut out this when you went there. He was trying to cut the distinction between an officer and other rank and NCO. In other words, he wanted you all to combine together to make a tank unit. What usually happens, see, officers thought when they went over there they're going to be looked after. And he wanted them to take their turns at various things, including a certain amount of guard duty. Because, after all, the other ranks come in from there doing their tank duty, and they were put on guard. And he suggested that the officers take their turn, because he said you can't have an officer which is getting a good night's sleep and the other rank's not getting any sleep at all. So he said you have them falling asleep most of the time while the officer was quite sprightly. So this is why everybody liked him. He told everybody had to knuckle in, which they did until he got killed and then reverted back again. I mean, most of the guards usually would tell you the sergeants used to do them, but the officers never used to do them. He was well liked by most of the regiment for that reason. And he was down to earth. He knew everybody and he knew what they were doing.
Any other individual incidents you can remember from the fighting in Normandy?
Not really, because it was just one confused thing after another. I mean, we used to come back one day, we were out the next day. We were mainly with the Royal Ulster Rifles, that was our main infantry, or the King Scottish Light Infantry, or the Lincolns, it was them, but it was mainly with the Royal Ulster Rifles. If it wasn't one thing, it was another thing. I mean, we used to take one area. And then Jerry used to infiltrate So we were back out next day trying to recapture again. It was just one confused, it was very confused at that time as to, we were on the outer perimeter while inside us was the build-up of the big divisional, like the guards and the 11th Armoured were landing ready for the final push-out.
What did you think of the Germans as a soldierly enemy?
They were obviously professionals. They were, a lot of them were hardened veterans. And their equipment was probably superior to ours, and at a lot of degree. I mean, their tanks were better than ours. That was a known fact. Ours were so lightly armoured that you could put a pea shooter through them, as you know. But they were reliable, and that was what they were used for. But there again, the Germans had the Tiger, the Panther, all heavily armed with a long barrel gun, which could outshoot any of our tanks, apart from the 17 pounder. Their equipment, they had the Spandau, and I suppose being they'd been at war a lot longer than us, they were probably a better officer material, obviously.
Did you come across civilians much in Normandy?
Yes, we came across all sorts, especially the Free French. Well, not the Free French, the Freedom Fighters, as they call them, or whatever they call them. They always used to walk around, you always tell them, because they used to have their little badge up and they all carried rifles.
What did the soldiers think of them?
They thought they'd done a good job. In fact, they used to get a lot of information from them. I mean, it was so confused in the Normandy that often we used to get bombed by our own planes. It was very confusing. And in one particular advance that we went on, which was after the breakout, we were on the left-hand flank after the breakout. We formed up a, we were in a sort of, we used to support the infantry, which is our main concern, but we formed what they call a mobile brigade. In other words, we had infantry in sort of tank car, and we formed a, like a, it's like a divisional, but we formed a brigade, and we went on, and we got blown off. A lot of our tanks got shot up by American Lightnings. I was so confused. And we eventually ended up in the Seine Valley, and there we took up our infantry work again in the Seine Valley, because there were some Germans there. There was no infantry with us, so we then dismounted our machine guns and off we went doing infantry work. Trying to capture them, which we did, eventually capture the Germans, which the French had pointed out were still there.
Can you describe how they were captured?
Well, we had one or two fires at them, you know, where we were firing with the machine guns and all that, and they came out with their hands up, that was it. And that was the end of them.
Did they surrender easily or not?
Well, quite easily, because by that time they had their backs to the Seine. Most of the equipment was piled up in the Seine. There was so much equipment there in the Seine. And of course, the other thing we got involved was the big push at Le Havre. We got brought back for that, for the big capture of Le Havre. That was the other big battle we'd done.
Can you describe what you saw of that, please?
Well, we were mainly involved with taking the outer fortress.